Nothing lights us up more than helping people grow their wealth through multifamily investing in a way that actually feels good and makes sense where they are right now. That's exactly why we created the Where Am I Now Multifamily Assessment.
Here's the thing, no two journeys ever look the same. Maybe you're just starting out and simply curious about what's possible. Maybe you're dipping your toes into your really first passive investment, or maybe you're craving that behind the scenes peek at how it all works.
You might even be gearing up to go big and acquire your first deal, or ready to scale your portfolio to new heights by teaming up with strong partners who can help you grow like never before.
Instead of tossing you one size fits all advice, boring and not helpful, this assessment zooms in on your exact stage of growth.
It helps us get to know your goals, your challenges, and what gets you most excited about building wealth through multifamily investing, so we can hand over the tools, resources, and support that actually moves the needle for you.
The best part? It only takes a few minutes, but the clarity you walk away with, that's the magic. Think of it as your roadmap to what's next.
Ready? Head to kittysisters.com/whereaminow to get started. That's kittysisters.com/whereaminow.
Last year, we crossed nearly $500 million in assets, and we didn't get there by working harder, chasing deals, or timing the markets. We got there by doing the opposite of what most high earners are taught.
I'm Pommy.
And I'm Nancy.
Together, we make the Kitty Sisters. We're apartment syndicators, entrepreneurs, and educators with big dreams and a $300 million multifamily apartment portfolio.
We're into helping successful entrepreneurs and founders who have a passion for real estate and $100K to $5 million to invest, all aiming to turn their business profits into a lasting legacy through income-producing asset investment.
This is Cashflow Multipliers, a podcast dedicated to your financial freedom and the lifestyle you deserve.
We started with $2,000, no safety net, no rich uncle, no blueprint. Today, we operate and co-own multifamily real estate and have access to the same type of investments that family offices and institutional capital do.
And here's the problem most successful people feel but can't name. If your job, your business, or exit already generates money, but you feel uneasy about what happens after you earn it, that's not accidental. Income teaches you how to make money. It doesn't teach you how to be steward of it or pass it on. Most high earners don't lose wealth themselves. They lose it one generation later. That's the gap. It's not a lack of effort or intelligence. It's pulling the wrong lever.
In this episode, we're breaking down the 5 rules every investor must know that actually compound wealth at scale. That's the same principle that survived COVID, 11 rate interest hikes, wars, and market chaos, and are built to compound across generations, not just lifetimes.
This is for you if you want faster deployment, less friction, and execution certainty without running operations. And if you're still trying to do everything yourself, that might be exactly why your wealth hasn't scaled.
By the end of this episode, you'll know what to stop doing immediately and what to plug into instead for real, repeatable compounding. Rule number one, think in decades. Be honest, everyone we talk to lately, business owners, CEOs, investors, friends, they all feel anxious, like something is about to break.
Because everyone's staring at the same headlines. Rates, inflations, wars, elections, deficits, it's nonstop noise.
So what are they missing?
I think they're missing perspective. They're thinking in days about assets that only works in decades. And that's the fastest way to sabotage your wealth.
That sounds obvious, but also like the rule people break the most.
Yeah, and that's the rule we, you know, used to break as well. Because when you think of long term, it feels so out there. It's like you'll stare into a tunnel that doesn't end. But we live in a world of instant gratification. And so we want that quick dopamine hit. What's the next win? What's happening? Win right now. But if you want to build generational wealth, that's not how it works.
Okay, explain to me like I'm sparring at 11 p.m. scrolling the news.
Here's the truth. We live in moments like this before. Over and over. We operate in multifamily real estate. You guys mostly know that. And here's what people overlook. Real estate isn't a trade. It's a civilizational asset. It survived technology, currency, cycles, because it's inseparable for human life. It was the original HODL, hold on for dear life model, thousands of years before Bitcoin had a name. Humans don't stop needing shelters because the world feels messy during wars, depressions, pandemic, inflation, political chaos. Housing doesn't disappear. Ownership just quietly transferred to people that hold on to them.
That's the part that always hits me. It's never dramatic. It's just silent.
Exactly. Hundreds of years ago, before spreadsheets, before algorithms, families built wealth the same way. They own land, they own housing, they own infrastructure, not because it was exciting, but because it was inevitable.
So you're saying timing didn't matter.
If you own income producing real estate, our bread and butter are multifamily properties or built to rent communities and held them through the last century, Great Depression, World War II, stagflation, multiple recessions, dot-com crash, financial crisis, COVID, you didn't need perfect timing. You didn't need to predict trades. You benefit from three things that compound whether you're emotional or not. This is the axiom. This is always true in the right market. Rents reset upwards over time. Think about it like this. In 1900, the median home price was $3,200. Today, $440,000. And it's not because homes are 137 times better. It's because the dollar lost 99% of its purchasing power. Put it differently, $1 in 1900 bought what $140 to $150 buys today, just in housing. Another axiom is debt gets cheaper in real time. You're paying back yesterday's dollar with tomorrow's cheaper dollar. That's just the rule of the game. Think about it this way. Within our property, we bought a multifamily property for $77 million. And the fixed rate debt on that is 3.49%. And the time we assumed the debt, it was 38 years long. So every single year that the US dollar is being debased, the residents of that property is actually paying down the mortgage at less valuable dollar. That means that you're paying like $1,000 in mortgage with dollars that's actually worth like $700. So it's always going to cost less for you to hold on to debt and pay it in the long term. And the third point is land and housing get scarcer as population grows. Let's face it. Today, we are still short 4.4 million homes in America, and we haven't built enough homes to compare to even the level in the 1960s. In the 1960s, we had half the populations, but we were building more homes back then.
So that's why institutions don't panic.
That's why institutions hold on to real estate for decades, not days, not months, not years.
And individuals, they try to trade long-term duration assets like a short-term stock. They watch values monthly and they react to headlines. So they continue to be confused by the volatility and the risk. Real estate syndication, pooling resources to acquire properties, was never designed for daily decisions.
Right. It was designed precisely to combat short-term thinking. That's why it's an illiquid market. But here's the cool part. With the right property, you can still get the benefit of short-term returns with long-term vision. Those are the hybrid strategies that are designed to have durable cash flow, forced appreciation, and long-term equity growth, run by teams who stay focused while everyone else reacts. That's what thinking in decades actually looks like. Time is your real advantage. Compound is the secret weapon, but only if you let it work. We study markets every day. We've done it for years. And the biggest lessons? Short-term predictions are useless. Think about the economists. Every economist would be billionaires if they can actually predict the market. In fact, they're really, well, you know what they're good at? They're really good at reacting to what has already happened. They're terrible at predicting the market. Otherwise, they would be predicting the inflation rate when interest rates are going to go up, go down, sideways. They're always wrong.
No one knows what happens tomorrow, next month, or even next year. But over 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years, we know exactly what happens.
The economy grows, innovation compounds, assets rewards patience. That's why we think in decades, not days.
And that's rule number one. Okay. Rule number two, you always say this, and I want people to really hear it. Why is ownership everything?
Ownership is a line. One letter separates owing from owning, but the letter separates financial survival from generational wealth.
Okay, that sounds dramatic, but it's true.
It is. We're living in two economies right now, a cage-shaped economy.
Explain that.
So a cage-shaped economy means not everyone, unfortunately, is recovering at the same rate or this in the same way. Instead of the whole economy moving up or down together, it's actually bifurcated. It's split into two paths. The top arm of the cage goes up. People who own assets, real estates, businesses, stocks, private investments get richer. In fact, I just read an article that explains that the top 10% earners are actually responsible for 50% of the consumption in the United States. That's a really significant portion. That means that their affordability and their disposable income scenario is significantly different than those who are in the bottom 90%. This means that the bottom arm of the cage goes down. People who rely mainly on wages, savings fall behind as costs rise faster than their income. Same economy, very different outcome. The difference isn't effort. It's ownership, meaning we live in a wealth-building economy. Stocks, real estate, businesses, infrastructure, crypto, commodities. When those assets grow or increase in value, their wealth grows with them, meaning the people who own them. The other group, they rent, they work for wages, they keep money in savings accounts that barely move. They don't participate in growth. They watch it happen for other people.
And that's the part that bothers me the most.
Same. Through syndications, crowdfunding, capital markets, real estate ownership was intentionally designed to be democratized, not concentrated.
But for most of the history, real estate ownership was locked behind scale.
Exactly. Either you had enough capital to buy property outright or you didn't own any of it. And that's why real estate syndication was revolutionary.
Because for the first time, individuals could pull capital capital
and own institutional quality real estate together. Not a rental house, not a side hustle, not some dingy thing in the hood, but large-scale income-producing assets, apartment communities, housing people actually rely on and want to live in. Again, going back to our $77 million purchase property, that property was something that individual investors wouldn't be able to buy. When I say $77 million, do you know how much money we actually raised for that deal? $34.9 million. Now, how many of you guys have that much money in your pocket right now? You're like, hey, Palmy, here, I got that. I got that handle. Not to mention the $40 plus million loan. You needed liquidity. You needed to have the net worth in order to actually even get that loan. So majority of the population, 0.01% of the population can actually afford to buy that property on their own. And that's why syndication is so significant. That property is an A-class asset in a really amazing market that none of us alone could have afforded. But collectively, we were able to purchase this asset that would be the envy of a lot of institutions.
So syndication did for real estate what early stock markets did for businesses.
Yes, it opens door to real ownership. In what world would two Asian sisters who didn't come from money be able to buy hundreds of millions of dollars of real estate if the playing field hadn't changed? We didn't look the part. We didn't sound the part. If you pass us on the street, you'd never guess what we do. I still remember the first room that we went in and it said that, hey, we're investors. We look ridiculous to those people because we were asking questions in a room that we technically didn't belong in.
Yep.
But that was exactly how it started. I completely remember thinking like, I saw the look of those people in the room and they were like, are they supposed to be in here? Did they sign up for the right room? Because they seem kind of lost. And it was pretty amazing. I feel like that room was so impactful because even if we didn't belong yet, we were going to be at some point.
And that was just a few years ago.
Yeah, that was the amazing part.
Now, I need to be clear because this is where people get confused.
They think owning something is enough. A 401k plan, a small REIT, allocation, a handful of funds. But institutions don't invest to feel diversified. They invest to own enough of that asset to actually matter. Think about it, the game of Monopoly. You start out walking around the board, you then buy a couple of single family homes, so screen homes, but ultimately the game is to buy as many reds across the entire board as much as possible so that there's no way someone can avoid actually landing on it.
Okay, Palm, let's make this real.
So at the beginning of this episode, we were talking about the hybrid multifamily strategy that works exceptionally well. It gives you some of the benefits people associate with shorter term investments, access to cash, liquidity events, without sacrificing long-term compounding that actually builds generational wealth. This is what we call the infinite money system. The idea itself is simple. You buy or build high quality multifamily assets with strong long-term debt structure. You're not buying to flip, you're buying to own. And importantly, this can be done through real estate syndication. Again, where you pool capital together to own institutional quality real estate that would be inaccessible to individuals. Here's the part most people miss. As the property's income grows, the value grows. And as the value grows, you can extract capital along the way without selling the asset. That's the most beautiful part. So you're getting paid while still maintaining ownership. Something most investors don't realize is even possible because the investment asset class that they're in don't allow for that. Rather yet, your lovely tenants are actually paying down the mortgage on your behalf. And that's why we call this a hybrid strategy. You receive ongoing income and periodic capital events similar to shorter term deals, but you keep the asset long term the way family offices and institutions do. You're not choosing between cash flow or compounding. You're designing intentionally for both of those to happen at the same time. Here's a simple way to think about it. You buy an apartment building over time, rent rises, operations improves, and the property produces income. Because real estate is valued on income, the building becomes worth more and more, even if the broader market doesn't change. Every few years, the property can be refinanced. You pull out capital, you pull out a portion of the increase in value, reset the loan, and continue owning the asset. That capital then can be reinvested, diversified, passed down, while the original keeps compounding in the background. We're not going to walk you through the entire calculation right now, but the exact math isn't the point here. What matters is the principle. You don't have to sell the asset to have access to value. And that's the difference between building income and building a system. This is how institutions think. This is how family offices operate. And once you see it, it's very hard to unsee it. To give you a real life example, let's talk about one of our build to rent communities. This is a 118 unit project developed in north of Dallas, which is townhomes. So from day one, it was designed for a long-term hold. We broke ground on this property a couple years ago. In January 2026, some of the units will be coming online and it will start producing income. And it's projected by end of 2026, Q1 of 2027, our community will reach around 90% occupancy. At that point, the income will be strong enough that the property will support refinancing. That refinancing in this specific project roughly generates about 30% extraction of the property's value without selling the property. What this means for investors is that they're projected to receive back around 30% of their original investment, not because of the sale, but because of efficient debt process. For someone, for example, who invested $1 million in this project, they would get back $300,000, but yet keep the same ownership percentage as if nothing has happened. As time goes on, the property income continues to rise. Inflation and dollar debasement, which hurts savers, actually helps real assets like this one push up rents, value rises. As the community matures and the surrounding areas become more desirable, the property's value increases even further. Fast forward a few years, we can refinance again. More value is unlocked. More capital is returned. Eventually, investors can reach the point where most or all their original principal is returned. This is a point where it's called infinite return. They don't have any more money in the deal, yet they still own the exact same ownership percentage. And that's the power of owning high quality long-term home. And this means that you can get to grow your own money tree, not a linear growth pattern. It's exponential growth. That's how you move from hundreds of thousands of dollars to tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars over a generation, not by chasing deals.
And that didn't require perfect timing
or predicting markets or managing tenants or selling at the right moment, but by owning quality assets long enough for compounding to do what it does always, because real estate doesn't rely on one return, it stacks them.
And that's why we built our investment firm the way we did.
We didn't build the firm to teach people how to trade or speculate. We built it because we saw a gap between how institutional build wealth and how individuals are told to invest.
Our investors aren't looking to try real estate.
They're looking to allocate capital intelligently. They value structural over activity, execution certainty over DIY control, and ownership that actually moves the needle.
So if someone listening to this, here's a real question they should ask themselves: how much of what you actually own participate in growth? Because 20 or 30 years from now, the people who own assets will be wealthy and the people who didn't will still be working. That's not a prediction. That's 400 years of history. So ownership is everything. That's rule number two.
So here's the deal. Some assets are built to generate steady income. Others are designed for long-term compounding, and some create value over time. So we talked about diversification here, where what we mean is there are investments for short-term, mid-term, and long-term. And don't get this confused with your 401k, totally different thing. We have things that are quick hit. For example, if you invest in our private credit fund, where you become the bank, it produces regular cash flow, but it doesn't have a massive upside. And that's okay. It solved the liquidity problem. Then you have mid-term investments. Think about our build-to-sell community. That's the midterm hit, because what we're doing there is we're building 105 unit of homes that are going to be sold off one after another. And that gives you chunk money in the midterm. And then you have our long-term investments, assets you hold for decades, like our build-to-rent community. These are the ones that are quietly compounding, benefiting from inflation, creating generational wealth over time. The system we just went over, right? The infinite money system.
So diversification doesn't eliminate volatility.
No, it protects you from being wrong about one thing, one assumption, one market, one strategy, one cycle that lasts longer than expected.
Okay, rule number four. This one always ruffles feathers. Why do you keep saying speed, convenience, and execution certainty matter more than fees?
Because once you're operating at scale, fees aren't the most expensive thing anymore.
Then what is?
Friction.
Define friction.
Time spent sourcing deals, evaluating operators, courting lenders, structuring legal entities, waiting for clarity while operating passes you by. None of those shows up on the statement, but it compounds faster than fee ever will.
We literally have seen people who save 50 basis points
and lose years in operating costs. That's not smart investing. That's false efficiency. I'd rather own a piece of watermelon than a whole grape. Think about Jay-Z in 2021 when he partnered with Moët Hennessy. Jay-Z sold a large part of his Ace of Spades champagne brand, and everyone at the time said, "What are you doing? Why are you giving up such control to this company that didn't found it, didn't have the startup pain that you went through?" And he gave an interview and he said, "I'd rather work with this amazing organization, give a large percentage away, but I know they're going to make me way more money." And that's why he'd rather own a piece of a watermelon than a whole grape, because he didn't have the infrastructure, he didn't have the know-how, he didn't have the distribution channels. So no one should work that way. If you want to be a small, you want to own a whole grape, you're going to continue being a small business owner.
And he also mentioned he wanted to spend time with his family, and that's why he sold that company.
Completely reasonable.
So what is rule number four in plain English?
We don't optimize for cheapest path. We optimize for fast, intelligent deployment. employment, minimum friction, institutional grade execution, structures that don't require our attention because over decades, the winners aren't the ones who pay the lowest fee. It's like walking over dollars to pick up pennies. That's not how to create generational wealth.
And that is rule number four. Okay, rule number five. This one feels different because it's the one that makes all the other rules work, even after everything, especially after everything.
Crossing nearly $500 million didn't eliminate risk. If anything, it made one thing very clear,
which is
the moment you think you figure it out, risk quietly walks into the room.
That's uncomfortable.
It should be. Markets change, capital markets evolve, regulation shifts, technology rewires how assets are operated, financed, and valued. If you assume tomorrow will look like yesterday, you don't just underperform, you get blindsided.
We have seen that happen
over and over again. People who are smart investors, they have plenty of capital, great track records. They didn't lose because they weren't intelligent. They lost because they stopped being curious.
They made on what worked last cycle.
Ignored signs, dismissed structural shifts, and real estate punishes that kind of ignorance. And you think about this, when people started seeing interest rates increases and they started seeing expansion, meaning the drop in valuation of the properties, and they still stick to buying C-class apartments. While you can definitely buy C-class, but if the price is reasonable for A-class, why not buy A-class apartments where there's actually loan products available and there's a larger buyer pool? And when the economy isn't doing well, in fact, A-class properties in our portfolio are still performing exceptionally well.
So staying humble doesn't mean being unsure.
No, it means being adaptable. It means consistently asking what's changed in financing, what's changed in renter behavior, what changed in regulations or insurance or property tax, what assumptions are no longer true. Let me give you an example. In 2025, we discovered this amazing thing called HFC. Well, essentially what it does is allows for you to apply for a tax abatement, meaning you don't pay property tax on the property. To give you context, one of our property, we pay around close to $50,000 a month in property tax. It's a lot of money, right? So by allowing for a component of the property to be under categorized as affordable housing, which means that you are under 80% of the average median income in that specific area, and there's a specific calculation for that, you're able to qualify for this thing called HFC. So again, tax abatement. We didn't know about this before, but having that component completely changes the economy of our property. If we were just sticking our head in the sand and just, hey, we're just going to increase rents and just try to squeeze expenses out of the vendors,
repaint the kitchen,
kitchen cabinet 1,000 times. Like, how else would we be able to increase the NOI, net operating income, which means that we'll be able to increase the value of the property? And something like HFC was amazing. We didn't discover this. Another one that's interesting, and we're still verifying this, but one of our really good friends mentioned that he put a beehive on one of his properties, and then he was able to get his property tax lowered by 40% because he is now categorized as agriculture versus residential. That's to be verified, but that's what he told us. So being dynamic and being curious to ask the right questions allows you to have the appropriate answer to be reflective and agile in any market condition.
Because some assumptions feel permanent.
And they never are. Debt isn't always cheap. Liquidity isn't always there. Demand doesn't always behave the same. Old playbooks eventually expire.
At a certain level, the biggest risk isn't volatility, it's rigidity.
The investors who win long-term aren't the ones who predict everything. They're the ones who adjust fastest without panic. They partner with a team who stay current, pressure test assumptions, evolve without abandoning discipline and rigor. They're the investors who aren't attached to being right.
Because being right once doesn't build generational wealth.
Staying attentive does.
That's rule number five. Okay, everyone keeps asking us the same thing. What actually works? Not theories, not TikTok advice, the real rules. So if someone remembers nothing else,
of course they're going to remember everything. But if you don't cure the things, think long-term, own real assets, diversify intentionally, move fast with certainty, and never stop learning.
Because generational wealth isn't built by being right once.
It's built by staying relevant through every cycle.
Those are the five rules.
Ignore them and the market will teach you anyway.
We can't wait to begin this journey with you. Check us out at thekittysisters.com/podcast.